bring in James Hamm. James, before we get to the Kings, like, this has been, all things considered, the Fred Warner injury, Brock Purdy being in and out of the lineup to start the year, the Mac Jones era, all of that different stuff, the Ricky Pearsall, Brandon Ayuk, all of these different things. There have been some really memorable moments for the San Francisco 49ers this year.
Yeah, I think the funny thing is it all of the other stuff overshadows just how good the team has been and how successful they've been. You know, we're sitting here talking about, you know, these guys don't really, whether they have a shot or not, at whether it's a Super Bowl or even winning here in the first round. But just the fact that they're still standing is nuts. Like that team, like they had every excuse to just like cash in a season multiple times. I mean, Brock Purdy missed, what, 6 weeks? Maybe more. Like, I don't know how many games Mac Jones started, but
not all at once either.
Right. Yeah. And you know, you brought up the Ricky Pearsall thing. I mean, the guy's been in and out of the lineup. You forget Juwan Jennings had broken ribs and a high ankle sprain and a shoulder issue all at the same time and kept going out there because of incentives. You know, and then the Brandon Ayuk situation, like any one of these situations could have derailed the season. And we haven't even got to the fact that your best pass rusher, your best linebacker, gone. You know, we're talking all pro players gone. Mm-hmm. It's been a really, really crazy season. That's why I do think, you know, like hat tip to Christian McCaffrey. Of course, he makes a big mistake in the Bears loss. I mean, not the Bears loss, the Seattle loss. But man, like, how do you put together a season like that when even half their interior line missed a bunch of time during the season? Just really, really impressive season for the San Francisco 49ers. Win, lose, or draw this week, you know, it's one of those seasons that, you know, they just played well above their heads, and you know, you hope that they have better luck next year.
They did have, sorry, a Ricky Pearsall graphic that came up that was tough. You know exactly what I'm talking about. I think it was at 20-17. I can't remember what the number was, but it said like games played 20, games missed 17. Mm. It was like, oh God, that might not have been the exact number, but it was something that's so close where it was like, oh God.
My boy Slick Rick, man, I love his game, but Niners gonna have to go.
The man was shot. Well, I just want to point that out.
That did happen.
The man was shot prior to his first season.
Yeah,
just point that out.
Yeah, but even that, like you can't go into next season with him as your number one or your number two. Like, he just can't. Like, it's unfortunate. He's proven time and time again, whether it was preseason his rookie year or, you know, then the getting shot thing. But, you know, like this season, again, no preseason, no ability to go through training camp, missed a ton of games throughout the season. You can't count him from 1 week to the next. Like, you got to find someone who's more durable and who can be your legit number one. Like, he's a good story and he can be part of the team. But you're always going to have an asterisk next to him that just, you know, availability is not there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, I agree with you 100%, James. Like, you got to go draft one, you know, you got to go draft another receiver or sign one in free agency. But I can't go into next year relying on Ricky Pearsall to stay healthy. Fantastic when he plays. I think he's really, really good when he plays. But you can't trust that right now. So, and he's a big part of what's going to happen on Sunday if he plays or not. So, one of my favorite 49er teams of
this one.
Yeah. I love this team. Okay. I love it's the story, you know, of what's going on. One of my favorite 49er teams.
Where does this Kings team rank in terms of your favorite Kings teams of all time?
How old am I? 42. They're probably 45th.
45th.
Yeah. Yeah, I, like certainly the most disappointing team I've ever covered in my 16 years, just without any question. And you know, we had Michaela, who's one of the Kings, you know, basketball communications people. She's like, "Are most seasons like this?" And it's like, "No, even the bad seasons haven't been like this." You know, like she was asking Sean and I, and you know, even I missed the 17 win season. I think it was 2 years. Wasn't the year before I started covering the team. It was a year before that. So I missed that, but just like the lack of cohesiveness, you know, I've covered a lot of bad teams with no talent and that's not what this team is. You know, this is a bad team with talent. And I think it's really frustrating to watch.
why has that? You say this team has talent. Why has this been the result? 8-29.
You know, I don't think anyone thought it would be this bad, but there were so many warnings about this team that we just weren't listening to. Like, you know, we knew it was a bad mix of players. We knew that they didn't have enough shooting. We knew that they, you know, that they were going to struggle defensively, regardless of how much Doug Christie wants them to play defense. They don't have a defensive roster. Like, we knew these things going into the season. We just didn't think it would be this bad. When you mix in the injuries and just the constant step backs, you know, the fact that Domantas Sabonis and Keegan Murray have never played together the entire season, you know, that Zach LaVine gets healthy the day that Keegan Murray tears up his ankle. Like, it's just one thing after another, where like finding any continuity is really, really difficult. Like, you should never, ever, ever have to walk into a game relying on a second round pick and an undrafted free agent, both rookies, as your starting and backup center. That's not, you know, and we're not talking about a top five pick that you're running out there and some other kid that like is playing better than you thought. This is literally a second round pick and an undrafted player are your one and two at the center position. And that's just, you know, you can't win that way. I mean, would this team look different with Valanciunas? Maybe. But at this point, I don't even know how much that would have helped. You know, there's just too many things here that we're looking at that haven't worked out at all. And I think a lot of it comes down to spacing and just like overall team chemistry, team build, which, you know, again, it's something that these guys inherited, but it's still difficult to watch, you know.
A little bit of a callback. Sorry, James. Talking to Dame real quick. A little callback from earlier. I have the Kansas TCU game on in front of me. Mm-hmm. TC has lost his mind. He has lost his mind. Darren Peterson just did something. No, he's lost his mind.
TC called us earlier and said, I'm out on Darren Peterson. Like, wait a minute. The Darren Peterson at Kansas who scored 30-something last night and single-handedly took that game to overtime and got Kansas a win.
He's crazy.
And to TC's credit, he was like, yep, that one. All right.
James, to that point, though, it wouldn't have put them like over 500 or anything like that. But as opposed to 8 wins, maybe it's 12, 13 wins. The injury thing I don't think can be overlooked. I mean, I'll put it to you like this. If you told all of us at the beginning of the season this is what the injury situation would be, we probably would have correctly picked that they win about 8 games at this point.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the injuries, you know, Doug Christie brings it up, and I think some people are looking at him like, come on, man, that's an excuse. Like, is it an excuse that, like, in the last couple of minutes before the season starts, you're starting small forward / power forward / only defensive player goes down? Like, and then, you know, the Domas injury, like, we're at 7 weeks at this point. Like, it's not like these are short-term things. Like, half of the Kings roster is ineligible for postseason awards, even if they were going to get there. You know, you can say, like, Russ keeps going out there and playing every night. DeMar keeps playing every night. But this has been a brutal situation. I mean, you had Dylan Cardwell, again, an undrafted free agent rookie, play in your first game of the season and start like in within the first 5. You know, Max Reino at this point, what's he at, like 18 starts, 20 starts? Like, that's crazy that you're getting this type of production out of him, number one. But number two, that's the situation that you're in. So, like, I think it's been one of those seasons where you're hoping that something good comes out of it. But I also, if I'm Scott Perry, I'm working the phones tirelessly trying to move off of any and every veteran I have. Just, you know, strip this thing down as quickly as you can and reboot as quickly as you can. It might not take 2 years. It might take 3 years. It might take 5 years to get back to where you thought you were going. But you certainly have to start the process as quick as possible and hope that you can set up this trade deadline can set up a better summer that can set up a different type of season next year.
So speaking of next year, we read Anthony Slater's column over on ESPN, very lengthy write-up on the Sacramento Kings and some on-the-record comments, a very on-the-record conversation with Scott Perry. The line that stood out to us, Hammer, and we really tied this into a conversation talking about the rookies, Nick, Max, who you just mentioned a second ago, and Dylan Cardwell. Slater said, according to a source, this was not attributed to Scott Perry. It was attributed to its team source that despite the start for the Sacramento Kings, Del Christie's job is safe. Kenny and I read that the same way. We did not read that as Del Christie is going to be the head coach next year. We read that as Del Christie will not be fired during this NBA season. I don't think any of us ever felt that he would, but it did pose a question. Whereas if Doug is not back next year as the head coach, what does what we're seeing from Max and Dylan Cardwell and to a certain degree Nick Clifford, what does that matter moving forward? Because we know Dylan and Max, we know that those are two guys that Doug really likes. If the next guy comes in and isn't a big fan of either one of those guys, like, what are we even watching right now?
Yeah, I mean, I get the question, but I mean, worst case scenario, those guys are number 11, 12, and 13 on your bench. Mm. Like, so I don't think you just throw them out. But like, look, it could work out that that's who they are anyways.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
Like that's just the nature of the game. Right. As of right now, we think Max Reynaud has, you know, played himself into some sort of role moving forward that we can see the outlines of Dylan Cardwell, all that stuff. But I would say that these aren't Doug Christie's players alone. They are Scott Perry's guys as well. Mm-hmm. Scott is the one who drafted, who signed each of these players. And so I think that there is a future for these guys in Sacramento. It just depends on to what degree. I mean, we still don't know. You know, it's one thing to start a bunch of games on an 8-win team, right? That's what Max is doing at this mm-hmm. point. It's a whole other thing to start or to earn rotational minutes on a, you know, 40-50 win team. It's a totally different game. So I think he showed enough to tell me that, like, look, he is probably a rotational player in the NBA, whether he's a starting center or not. Like, you got a couple of years to develop him and before we really have to, like, put that under a microscope. You know, even if he starts next season, like the whole year, let's say that Domas isn't here and he starts the entire season, it still, we don't know that that's who he is as an NBA player, because I would expect next year's team, if Domas, if, you know, DeMar and you know, some of these other veterans aren't around, Zach LaVine aren't around, like, that's probably going to be a 20 to 30 win team. So, you know, without, you know, finding a whole bunch of players to come on board and, you know, right the ship here, I would expect next year's season to be pretty similar and pretty rough, just without as many veterans hanging over your head. And without the cap flexibility, I mean, the cap restraints that you have at this point. Like, that's what this trade deadline has to be about right now. It's got to be, you know, I know some people aren't going to like it that, you know, maybe it's not Zach LaVine that goes, but it's, you know, guys like Malik Monk, or it's guys like, you know, Dennis Schroeder, or, you know, guys like Keon Ellis that are moved at the deadline. Like, whatever you can do to free up space is what you have to do at this point. You've got to reset this thing, and you've got to get it to a point where you have just like this freedom to go out on the open market. And, you know, again, if you can't sign a really good free agent or three really good free agents, maybe what you can do is take on two or three bad contracts from another team, from multiple teams, and take in draft capital and rebuild your roster and your war chest that way. There are a lot of ways to build and to rebuild and to, you know, restock a team. And the Kings are going to need every single one of those avenues moving forward. So that's why, you know, again, like I brought it up earlier, and just sort of the fake trades that we like to do on the insiders, but you know, a fake trade that could look more realistic is Malik Monk going to Minnesota for Mike Conley and Rob Dillingham. Like that just makes too much sense for both teams. Like Malik would help them win right now. He would help them win more games right now. And you could buy out Mike Conley, but the key is you're losing $10 million, $15 million in cap space, and you're gaining a guy who was the number 8 pick in the draft last year. So almost like another first round pick that you're at least looking at. And, you know, if the Kings are going to do that with, you know, kick the tires, really, really kick the tires on a guy like Jonathan Kuminga, you should also be kicking the tires on a guy like Rob Dillingham, on players like that who just haven't found their way in the NBA on a really good team. And, you know, maybe you do strike gold. Maybe you do find your, you know, I'm not going to say Rob Dillingham's going to become the next Shea, but maybe you find a guy who can develop and grow. And that's where the Kings need to be right now. They need young players. They need assets. And if they're dealing with a team that doesn't have assets, that doesn't have like draft capital, but they do have young players that aren't getting any burn, go ahead and take a gamble on some of these guys.
That would be exciting if a trade like that happened. Be able, because I'm very, I don't necessarily think they're going to be able to move a veteran or a guy like Malik Monk, you know, to get a young player the caliber or with the potential of a Rob Dillingham. But if they're able to, and that'd be exciting, you know what I mean, to be able to move off one of the older guys, one of the bigger contracts, and bring a guy in that, like you said, was a top 10 pick a year or two ago and has a lot of upside. Like that's almost an ideal situation.
Yeah, and like, look, we've talked about this a bunch of times. Like, we need something to like watch in the second half of the season. Like, everyone would be glued in. Like, hey, let's see what this kid has. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a top tier prospect that just, again, for whatever reason, hasn't figured out how to play in Minnesota, how to crack their rotation. And sometimes that happens with a really good team. You know, like, there are guys like Keegan Murray that walk in the door and are going to start for a really good team. Of course, that wasn't a really good team the year before. It just ended up being a really good team with Keegan as a rookie. But now what you're looking at with Minnesota, they just have too much depth at his position. And, you know, not only that, like, I think you can expand that trade and you can maybe get another asset out of that team by moving Keon Ellis in that trade as well. So they can try to replace some of the players that they lost during the offseason. And, you know, there's a possibility here that you might be able to get a second round pick or 2 second round picks or a late first round pick, something like that, out of a team like Minnesota, who, you know, again, went to the Western Conference Finals 2 years in a row and is sitting here watching the Oklahoma City Thunder, who looked absolutely unbeatable and like a team of, you know, destiny, you know, 2 weeks ago, all of a sudden looked very mortal. And so, like, yeah, why not load up? Why can't it be a team like Minnesota? They shouldn't just, you know, say, oh, we lost, you know, Alexander Walker during the offseason or whatever, whoever it was that they lost, and say, oh, like, we're not going to be that good at it, that as good as we were last year. It's like, no, they can still make moves. You know, Keon Ellis would help.
Two games out of the second seed, by the way. 24-13.
Malik Monk would help that team. Yeah. And if you're looking at this, is it's not only like if there's one team in the West that everyone is afraid of, is there a team in the East that anyone's afraid of? Like, if you can get through the West,
Pistons,
and it might not take, well, maybe, but like in a 7 game series in the finals,
Kate is so terrifying right now. That boy's balling.
Yeah. So, like, look, I think that there's a, there's a pathway here that teams are looking at it. You know, I don't think the NBA looks like the NFL landscape right now where, you know, it's a wide open Super Bowl race. But I certainly think that, you know, there was a time where, you know, again, the Rams looked like a team of destiny, a team that was going to roll through everybody and like the best team in football. And they don't look that way anymore. And I kind of feel like the same with OKC. There's at least a little bit of doubt about how good they are and about how far they can go. And I also look at the window that Minnesota's dealing with. Their window is probably 2 or 3 years, you know, and that's all you got. And those 2 or 3 years, you're going to have to go up against OKC. You're going to have to go up against Houston. You're going to have to go up against San Antonio. And then you're going to watch those teams ascend while you're trying to figure out what's next. You know, the post Julius Randle, the post, you know, Rudy Gobert, like look of what that team will look like. And, you know, they might have Ant-Man, they might not, but for right now, like that's a team that probably should go for it and push all their chips in on a season like this.
For those that aren't hip, 29, 37, 40, 33, 32, 37, 39, 26, 36. What are those? Those are Cade Cunningham's point totals the last 9 games.
Cade, he's averaging like probably 2 blocks a game.
Yeah,
this
man, he is nasty.
Oh, he's really good. Yeah.
Nasty, nasty, nasty. Doubled. He had a 17-assist game in there. He's had double-digit assist games in over half of those games I just read off. He had an 18 free throw, very Shea-like effort against the Miami Heat on New Year's Day for Cade Cunningham. That entire Minnesota thought centered on Malik Monk. And I'm going to ask a question. Why isn't Malik Monk playing? I'm going to ask a different question. Are we going to find out why Malik Monk isn't playing the day after he's traded? Because it feels like there's something here. And I'm going to ask you to hold off on that answer, James, because that answer is probably going to be more than a minute long. So we'll step out. We'll come back. Hammer, I want to ask you about last night's game and why that second half went the way that it did, why that fourth quarter, particularly the final couple of minutes, went the way that it did. And then we'll get your thoughts on Malik Monk and the DMPs that he's wrapping up. So we got more with our insider from the insiders. It's James Hamm with D'Lo and KC here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. James Hamm with us here on this Wednesday. D'Lo and KC, you're on ESPN 1320. I want to get to last night's game, but Hammer, you were talking about Minnesota a minute ago and how an acquisition of Malik Monk could be really solid for them. And you've done some reporting recently. There have been some murmurs around Minnesota and their interest in Malik Monk. And, of course, Malik, another DNP last night, and I think that's his second in a row. And, his time as a Sacramento King is figuratively over. Like, he might play, he might step on the floor again, but his time of having a role on this basketball team is likely done. How did we get here? Like, how did we get here so quickly?
Yeah, it's one of the more bizarre twists and turns, you know. I don't know. We haven't reached this stage yet, but it almost feels a little bit like Rashawn Holmes, you know, where Rashawn was like such a huge part, like fan favorite. Everything's going great. Everything's going great. Signs a contract, comes back, and then, oh, nope. See ya. You know, just stuck in neutral. Can't get off the bench. You know, they gave a starting position away when they acquired Domantas Sabonis. And it was just a matter of time before he was gone. I don't know how, like, you know, again, Malik has a big personality. I think we all know that. He's got a big personality on the court. He's got a big personality off the court. He's a fan favorite because of that. But sometimes that doesn't always play out well when things are going, like, really bad for a team. And, you know, the Kings have a ton of guards. And I know people don't want to hear it. That Russell Westbrook and Dennis Schroeder and, you know, Zach LaVine are ahead of him in the rotation, but they are. I mean, that's the honest answer. And, you know, for that matter, when the Kings were able to shift Keegan Murray to the small forward position, that pushed DeMar DeRozan into the backcourt, and he basically just took the minutes that Zach LaVine would have taken out of that backcourt. So at one point this season, we have everybody upset because Keon Ellis isn't playing. Another point this season, we have everyone upset because Malik Monk isn't playing. Now Monk is, you know, on the bench. Keon is playing. And, you know, again, it's because they think the other players are better suited for what they're trying to do. And I know we can say, well, you know, you got 8 wins, you got to try something different. They've tried just about everything, and Malik's been a big part of you know, the rotation at times this season. I'm kind of caught off guard that it's gone this south this quickly as well. But let's not forget, like, they shopped him and tried to trade him all offseason. They literally were trying to move him for Jonathan Kuminga up until the day the season started, or whatever the date was that Jonathan Kuminga signed his extension with with the Warriors. So we should have, again, saw this coming. And I'd say this too, it's kind of a bummer because I think Malik really found a home here, and there's a lot of things that he loves about Sacramento. He's bought property here and a home here. He loves to golf. You know, there's a lot of things about Sacramento that Malik loves and that he wants to be a part of. But just because you want to be part of something, doesn't mean that the new regime that's here in Sacramento wants you to be part of that. And there is some baggage from last season and the season before and how things played out with Malik. And I don't think that that's really helped him in this situation. So I hope that they're able to find him a soft landing spot. I really wish that it would have been different here and that, you know, like, they would figure out a way for him to be back in the rotation playing the 24 to 28 minutes a night, because I think he is dynamic. I think he's fun. I think he gets a crowd into it. But I also, at the end of the day, I understand that you probably can find a cheaper version of Malik Monk, and that having an $18 million six man is a luxury for a good team. It's not something a rebuilding team typically has. And so the Kings are probably going to go in a different direction here. And it, look, we think, like, it's very possible that Malik, they can't find a taker for him between now and February 5th. And he's part of this team going into the summer. And, you know, maybe there's a way in which he works his way back into good graces and finds himself back in the rotation and back on the court. But for right now, the reality is he's the fifth guard, and sometimes the sixth guard. And that's just, you know, you don't spend that kind of money on a player that's fringe rotation for you at this point.
Man, so many things that go on with that situation, because it kind of goes back to what we talked about on the handoff yesterday. In my opinion, is they're not trying to win basketball games. Maybe Doug is. Maybe Doug is out of the loop of what others want to do there. Maybe he's not. I don't know. But there's no way. Like, Malik Monk, he's not the difference between 8 wins and 30 wins right now, but he's better than Keon Ellis. Like, he's a better basketball player than him. He gives you a better chance to win games. He's better than Dennis Schroeder. I know you got to play Dennis to a certain degree because you signed him in the offseason, but he's better better than Nick Clifford. I know Nick Clifford plays a couple of different positions, but not playing Malik Monk and still having the same outcomes that you're having regularly, whether you're losing close or getting beat by 40, you can't be telling me that you're trying to win games. Like, that's what I'm saying. They don't have to come on these airwaves or put it in a Slater article for me to see what really you're not trying to win. You can't be. You're not putting your best foot forward.
I would say this, like, Dennis Schroeder's a better natural point guard. He is. He's a better floor general than Malik. He's a better defender than Malik. Keon Ellis is a better three-point shooter. He's a better defensive player than Malik Monk. Like, there are certain situations in which, you know, again, this isn't to disparage Malik Monk. I think he's an excellent player. But there are certain players that, you know, need the players around them to be good. And I think that's kind of like you're watching a team that, like, finding success and finding the right mix. It's not like Malik changed the mixture of the players on the court and helped them win more games. And, you know, like, I get that Doug Christie's asking for defense. And if Malik's not going to go out there and play defense like Keon Ellis, then he's going to find himself outside the rotation. And, like, we can talk about whether Keon has been incredible or not, but even last night, what he ends up with 5 points on 2 of 8 shooting, something like, maybe he had 7 points. but he also had three steals and two blocks. And he was disruptive. He probably had like five or six deflections last night where, I mean, you guys saw it even late in the game. He had a deflection where he knocked the ball out of bounds on the baseline. Like, he can be impactful in that way. And when that's what the standard is, that's what you're trying to do. And when you're going out there and starting a rookie center who has deficiencies on the defensive end, and you need to slow down the opposition and not let them get to the basket. Like, look, I think that, you know, again, if Domantas Sabonis and Keegan Murray are healthy and playing every game this season, number one, the Kings don't have 8 wins. They've got a lot more than 8 wins. But also having those two players helps you have a player like Malik Monk on the court where he just goes out there and is instant offense and is running up and down the court doing crazy things, and but isn't playing that much defense. When you pair Malik with the rest of the guys on this roster and you start looking at how many non-defensive players they have, it does make sense that you would choose a defender over him, and that you would choose two defenders over him. I don't think Dennis Schroeder is a great defender, but, you know, throughout his career, he's been league average, maybe a little bit better at times. Either way, he's a better defender than Malik. And, you know, when you're trying to keep opposing teams off of your rookie center and out of the middle of the key, and you're trying to disguise that you have a 37-year-old, you know, starting small forward and a 38-year-old starting point guard, or what are they, 36 and 37? Maybe that's right. You do need defensive players around those guys. So again, I see some of the logic of it. I also understand how Malik is a phenomenal player, and I would have him on the court as well. But I think there's give and take here. And unfortunately for Malik, it's come down to, you know, are you better? Are you better than the players that you're behind? And I don't think the answer is yes. And I'll even add this, like, we can talk about Russ all we want. Like, there are things that Russell Westbrook, he does that drive me bonkers. Like the hesitation on the 3-point shot, all that's, you know, like, what are you doing? I'm not quite sure what's happening there, but like when he doesn't just play within the flow, it does get crazy. But when you're down Domantas Sabonis, who's the best rebounder in the NBA, and you're down Keegan Murray, who is your second best rebounder, for huge stretches of the season, both of them have been missing for a huge portion of the season. And you have a guy like Russell Westbrook, who, whether you play him, you know, 25 or 35 minutes, is going to go out there and get you 7 or 8 rebounds a game from the point guard position. It's out of necessity. A lot of what we're seeing is out of necessity. You know, again, Russell Westbrook is a much, much better rebounder and assist guy than Malik Monk. I think Malik's a better scorer at this point in his career, but just as that part of it, you have to look at some of the cause and effect of the injuries that you've had this season. And, you know, I think it plays into it as a huge portion of why we're seeing Doug Christie make some of the decisions that he is making.
And real quick, not because I understand Hammer. I get it. I completely get it. I understand. I'm just playing maybe devil's advocate, even though he doesn't need any more advocates. For those that want to see Malik out there, not having him play has not worked at all. Like, the people that you've put in for him have not made the situation any better. Mm-hmm. You're still getting beat by a combined 60 points in 2 games in LA. Like, you're uncompetitive against the Celtics, against the Pistons. Like, that would be probably their argument, right? Like, everything in theory is 100%. Like, I get it. But after, we're talking about a month at this point where Malik hasn't really been playing, you still stink. You're not even close to being good. Mm-hmm. So why are you not playing this guy? You already went through it. I understand. I'm just saying, like, that's probably the thought for some people. It's like, all that makes sense. You're right. But that's not – you're not getting the results out of this change.
Well, no, I get you. But, you know, Malik's played 21, like, almost 22 minutes a game in 29 games a season. It's not like he didn't play, and or it's not like that he was so good when he did play that you have to keep playing him. You know, everybody on this team, in my opinion, that like everybody who has played has had horrible stretches. You know, even DeMar DeRozan's had a handful of games where it's just like, what is happening? But for the most part, he's been the most consistent player on this roster. And, you know, that's something. That's why he stays in the rotation. He is a guy who can close in the fourth quarter and stuff like that. But, like, look, I think a lot of it is circumstantial. And also, I think a lot of it, just so people know, some of the time it's how you handle the losing and how you handle what's going on. Because, you know, there are guys that we always talk about are pros and handles everything, you know, like they're the guy in the locker room that everyone goes to when they have trouble and stuff like that. I think Malik is a really, really fun dude. And when things are good, it's really good with Malik. I also think we all have friends that we know that there are the life of the party. And we also know the dark side to those people. And so when things aren't going good, you know, there can be issues, especially with people who run hot and cold like Malik does. And so I think we will have more on this as we get closer and closer to him not being a Sacramento King, and certainly after the fact that if he is no longer a King. But at the same time, I'd tell you, like, there are enough murmurs that it just, like, the losing, it wears on everybody, but it wears on some people in a different way. And those people can wear on everybody when things go south. And so I would kind of start to put Malik in some of that category, that just like handling the losing has not been easy.
Head over to ESPN1320.com and enter to win 2 single day passes to the Sportsman's Expo at Cal Expo Thursday, January 15th through Sunday, January 18th. Again, that's over at ESPN1320.com. This also, it sounds like you mentioned, Hammer, that like you reminded us that, well, the Kings tried to shop Malik Monk all off season. This very much sounds like a Scott Perry thing. And one, and you can correct that if I'm wrong, but this very much sounds like a Scott Perry thing, and maybe his first order of business was like, you know, let's get Malik out of here. Casey, you said something the other day. I'll tie this together, I promise. You said something yesterday about the clock. You know, maybe the clock hasn't started, or you know, you could prolong. This Dennis Schroeder signing has been a failure. And it's been a failure in my estimation for multiple reasons. One is the domino effect to Malik Monk. Two, you can give me that BS line about you didn't know if you were going to sign Russell Westbrook. That's fine, man. If I knew and you didn't, I don't know. Like, I want a pay raise, because our sentiment never changed. And I'm not willing to say that the clock hasn't started. Like, he had that's a miss. Mm-hmm. The Dennis Schroeder signing is a miss, and there was a domino effect to that miss. You switched him out of the starting lineup pretty quickly, put Russell Westbrook there. But then, Hammer, as you pointed out immediately, there was this issue at, you know, in the backcourt. There was this logjam because you had to deal with DeMar DeRozan. We thought Malik Monk was going to wind up being, or we thought maybe Keon Ellis was going to wind up being a casualty. Now you got this Malik Monk situation. I don't even know what the point of this statement was, other than to say, I think Scott Perry missed on the Dennis Schroeder signing, and he seems to be the one who spearheads this Malik Monk situation.
And combining that, you think, and I'm not going to argue, you think his clock has started because of that Schroeder signing.
I don't even know what that means. Like, it's a miss for me. He doesn't get a pass for that. It's a miss for me. Whether the clock has started or whatever, like, you missed with this. Mm-hmm. It was a miss. Mm-hmm.
So first off, while we're sitting here, I just realized that both of you guys are wearing like cream colored sweatshirts, and I'm wearing a black sweatshirt, and I look like a reverse Oreo smashed in the middle with your clothing here.
Well, you do anyway. No matter what clothes we have on.
It doesn't matter what James is wearing.
I love that James just noticed that.
Well, that would be a regular.
Wait, yeah, that's right. But look, also... I love James was with us earlier. Didn't know we have the same color pants on too. Like, it's pretty embarrassing when we're in the office together. Not a good look. Not a good look for your boys today.
We talked about this before the season started. I kept saying, like, you cannot sign Russell Westbrook if you still have all these guys on the roster. If not, it's just not a good use of assets. Like, this was always going to be the case. Someone was going to lose. And I think some of us thought right away it would be Keon. Others thought it would be Malik. And the answer, to be honest with you, they both lost. They both lost their spot in the rotation, in the growth of this team, and who what this team was supposed to be. And I think the bigger travesty here is not, you know, the individual players as much as it is you chose a 31, 32-year-old and a 37-year-old over a 25-year-old and a 27-year-old. And, you know, it's not just that the Kings are the second oldest team or the third oldest team. They are, like, the minutes distribution says that they're like the oldest team at like 29.6 years of age. Like, they're playing more old players, more minutes than any team out there. And, like, look, you are going to lose no matter what. One of those guys, both of those guys, and the fact is you've lost them both, because I'll keep saying this. Keon Ellis is not signing back. I don't, like, and if he does, it's because the Kings have to overpay him egregiously on, like, as soon as he's available for an extension. I don't think either one of those things are going to happen. And I honestly don't believe he'll be on this team when we get past the trade deadline, because I think the Kings already understand that. I think they've already got the memo from Keon and his people that, like, look, this ship has sailed. Like, because he's behind the eight ball and he's not getting the minutes that he wants or that realistically he's earned and deserves over the last couple of years. But that's what happens. There's always going to be players that get lost when you switch, you know, when you switch head coaches, when you switch general managers. There are people that are super attached to one group and then another. And that's why, like, at the NBA level, you really have to be careful about how, you know, the whole grass is greener thing that De'Aaron Fox talks about. I think there are people here in Sacramento that thought the grass would be greener without Mike Brown. And I think that they're learning very, very quickly and in a harsh way that they were wrong, that they probably should have been on board with Mike and helping Mike get the team right last season, as opposed to helping Mike leave the building. And, you know, that's just, I think, you know, I've been through this too many times. You know, Doug Christie is a 10th head coach I've covered. He won't be the last head coach that I cover, most likely. And, like, look, there's always players who think that, you know, it's going to be better when we go a different direction. And then they find the harsh reality afterwards. Because the Mike Brown firing leads to the De'Aaron Fox trade, leads to Wes Wilcox walking out the door and Monty McNair getting fired. That's what happens in these situations. And I've seen it too many times. And it's like, hey, you know, like, what's going to happen with Dave Yeager? Dave Yeager is going to get fired at the end of the season, and things could spin out of control. Like, it's what happens. And, like, to not be able to predict something like this is, and it, we've seen it too many times. Like, fooled me once, you know, this is like, we've been fooled seven times, fooled eight times.
You fool me, you can't get fooled again. The fact that we had an extended conversation on that statement earlier this week is funny. We only have a couple of minutes left. How bad were those final few possessions for Sacramento last night?
It's just such a bummer, because they just don't know how to help each other succeed. You know, at the end of the day, basketball's it's a five-man game, and you have to work together. Everything has to work together for you to find success. And for whatever reason, this team fights against itself every step of the way. And watching the last 5 minutes of that game, 4 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever you want to look at, it just looks like so many other five-minute blocks of time for this team throughout the year. And, you know, I think what frustrates people like Doug Christie and even, you know, fans that go to every game or people who cover the team, it's that The same team that came out against the Milwaukee Bucks and for 6 minutes looked like world beaters and, you know, going on like a 14-0 run and erase the deficit and get the game within 3 points is the same team that turns around, loses that same exact game by 18 points. And it's just like there is no rhyme or reason to the selfishness and the, like, realistically, the basketball as a collective, the basketball incompetence of this team. Like, I don't know how to express it any other way. You have teams on the ropes and you can't put them away, but also you lose by 40 all the time. You lose by 30 all the time. This team has lost by 20 more than any other team in the league, I'm pretty sure. And if not, it's like the second most. Like, that's just, you're not cohesive. You're not a unit. You're not playing together. And that's what I mean by incompetence. I don't think anyone is an incompetent person or an incompetent player. But as a group, you know, they, if they were working a construction site, they would have got fired on day one. You know, they would have been the one who puts in a concrete slab that slopes a negative 4 inches from one end or one corner to the next. You would have been like, hey, that's unacceptable work. We now have to tear all that out. You're all fired. That's how they play together. And it's really unfortunate to watch, but it's the 2025-2026 Sacramento Kings.
No. Scott Perry is that construction work, construction site supervisor. So let's get all these guys out of here.
Yeah, he needs to start firing people. Figuratively, of course. What's the next game? Is it Warriors?
Friday, I think. Yeah, Friday.
Chase. Yeah. All right. We'll check Kenny's meter on the 49ers Eagles tomorrow. Because oh, boy.
I've been putting together the game plan.
Just dawned on me. Okay. I'm not even going to feed into that, man. I'm just going to end the show
because
this is going to be a long 2 days. So buckle up, non-49er fans, because your boy going to be on one. We got to talk a little bit of Raiders tomorrow, too. So we'll be back with you beginning at 10 a.m. With the Insiders here on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
Vamos, Darren Peterson.